The dust from the marble saw tastes like expensive chalk. It settles on my tongue. A fine, gritty reminder that everything in this valley is being ground down to satisfy a single man's vision. I am standing in the center of what will be the atrium, a space designed to swallow the sun. The glass overhead is 3 inches thick, reinforced with a subtle, shimmering mesh that catches the light at noon. To my left, the polished concrete floor stretches toward the north wing, unbroken by transitions or seams. To my right, Marcus is adjusting the cuff of his linen shirt. He does not look at the blueprints spread across the makeshift table. He looks at the way the shadow of a crane bisects the floor. The crane is silent today. The only sound is the rhythmic metallic ticking of a cooling generator somewhere in the sublevel. I need to move the load-bearing column 3 feet to the east. If I don't, the cantilevered balcony will eventually groan under its own weight, a slow-motion failure that would take a decade to manifest. I explain this to him using the vocabulary of physics, stress points, torque, structural integrity. Marcus listens with his head tilted, his expression as unreadable as the dark water in the infinity pool outside. He reaches out and touches the edge of the blueprint, his thumb smoothing over the vellum. His skin is a deep, matte contrast against the stark white paper. He says that the column stays where it is. He says that he prefers the tension. He tells me that a house without a little bit of danger is just a box. He smiles, but his eyes remain fixed on the blueprints, tracing the lines I drew 3 months ago when I still thought this was just a career-defining commission. The secret hunger is not the money. The money is astronomical. A number that has already cleared my student loans and bought my mother a condo in Scottsdale. But the money is just the fuel. The hunger is the autonomy. In the city, I was a junior associate at a firm where my name appeared in the fine print of someone else's legacy. Here, I am the hand of God. Marcus gave me 40 acres of high desert scrub and an unlimited line of credit. He told me to build something that would outlast the concept of a mortgage. He told me he chose me because I wasn't afraid of scale. He was right. I am obsessed with the way steel can be made to look like silk. I stay because I want to see if I can actually make the roof float. The anchor of normalcy is the bowl of green apples on the kitchen island. Every morning at 6, a member of the silent rotating staff replaces them. They are always Granny Smith. They are always chilled. I take one every morning and carry it with me as I walk the perimeter. Today, the apple is particularly cold, the skin waxy and perfect. I bite into it as I walk toward the eastern exit, the one that leads to the equipment staging area. The door is a heavy slab of charred cedar, fitted with an electronic lock that sits flush against the frame. I reach for the handle, my fingers still sticky with apple juice. The handle doesn't budge. This is the third time this week the biometric sensor hasn't recognized my thumbprint. It's a technical glitch, Marcus says. The desert heat messes with the sensors. The dust gets into the crevices. I turn around and see Marcus standing at the far end of the gallery. He is holding a glass of water, watching me. He doesn't offer to help. He doesn't call out. He just stands there, a dark silhouette against the brutalist concrete, and waits for me to realize that I am not going anywhere until he decides the conversation about the column is over. The exit mirage happened 3 weeks ago. I told him I needed to go back to the city to consult with the glass manufacturers in person. The samples they sent were slightly off-tint, a microscopic lean toward green that would ruin the sunset reflection. Marcus agreed immediately. He told me his driver would take me to the airstrip at dawn. I packed my leather duffel bag with a sense of triumph that felt like a physical weight lifting off my chest. I spent that evening drinking a vintage Bordeaux with him on the terrace, talking about the properties of light. I felt like a partner. I felt like an equal. At 4 in the morning, the driver wasn't at the gate. The gate itself was dead. The massive steel panels that slide into the hillside were locked in the closed position. When I found Marcus in the library, he was surrounded by hundreds of printed photographs of the site. He looked exhausted. He told me the manufacturer had called at midnight. They were filing for bankruptcy. The glass was already on a truck, diverted to a warehouse 2 states away. If I left now, the shipment would be lost in the legal shuffle. If I stayed, he could use his influence to intercept the delivery. He looked at me with such genuine concern, such a profound need for my expertise, that I felt a surge of protective vanity. I stayed to save the glass. It wasn't until 2 days later, while checking the manufacturer's website on a restricted VPN, that I saw they were having their most profitable quarter in a decade. The failure point is the moment I stopped asking for the Wi-Fi password. It was a Tuesday. I had been in the house for 5 months. The structural shell was complete, a ribcage of white steel and glass rising out of the sand. I was sitting in my living quarters, a glass box within a glass box, trying to draft the interior staircase. I realized I hadn't checked my personal email in 12 days. I hadn't called my mother. I hadn't looked at a news headline. I stood up to go find Marcus, to demand the satellite link be restored. But then I looked at the staircase. It was perfect. It was a spiral of cantilevered stone that seemed to defy gravity, a feat of engineering that would make me the most famous architect of my generation. If I left, if I fought him, if I made a scene, he would hire someone else to finish it. Someone else would put their name on the plaque in the entryway. Someone else would explain the mathematics of the stone to the journalists. I sat back down. I picked up my stylus. I decided that the silence was actually good for my process. I decided that the lack of outside contact was a luxury, a way to filter out the noise of a world that didn't understand the purity of what we were doing here. The house is becoming a person. It has a circulatory system of copper piping, a nervous system of fiber optic cables, and a skin of glass. Marcus walks through the rooms like he is walking through my mind. He knows which corners I labored over. He knows which shadows I intended to be soft, and which I intended to be sharp. He treats the architecture like a shared secret, a physical manifestation of a private language spoken only by the two of us. Sometimes, at night, I hear the house settling. The steel expands and contracts with the temperature shifts of the desert. It sounds like breathing. I lie in my bed, staring at the ceiling, and try to remember the layout of my apartment in the city. I try to remember the sound of sirens and the smell of exhaust. It feels like a dream I had once. A messy, disorganized dream where nothing matched and everything was temporary. Here, everything is permanent. Everything is intentional. Marcus came into the studio today while I was working on the lighting plot. He stood behind me, so close I could feel the heat radiating from his chest. He didn't touch me. He never touches me. He just leaned over my shoulder to look at the screen. He pointed to the master suite, the room at the very top of the spire, the one with the 360-degree view of the horizon. He said it was too open. He said he wanted the windows there to be programmable, to turn opaque at the touch of a button. He said privacy is the only true currency left in the world. I told him that the openness was the whole point of the spire. It's meant to be a lighthouse, a beacon. He laughed softly. He said he didn't want to be found. He said he wanted to be contained. He looked at me then, his eyes reflecting the blue light of the monitor. He said he wanted us to be the only two people who knew how to operate the house. He spoke about the we, as if it were a legal entity, an unbreakable contract signed in the very foundations of the building. I went to the kitchen to get an apple. The bowl was empty. This was a deviation. The staff never forgets the apples. I walked to the service entrance, the one hidden behind the pantry. I pushed on the door. It was locked. I went to the main entrance. Locked. I went to the garage. The cars were there. Three silver ghosts under silk covers. But the overhead door was disconnected from the motor. I found Marcus in the atrium. He was sitting on the floor, in the exact spot where I wanted to move the column. He had a bottle of champagne and two glasses. He told me the house was officially finished today. The final inspection had passed, conducted by a man I never saw. A man Marcus said was an old friend. He told me the contractors had been paid and sent home. The gates were locked for the season. The desert was about to enter the high heat of July, a time when the roads become soft and the air becomes unbreathable. He poured a glass of champagne and held it out to me. He said I should be proud. he said, we have built a masterpiece. I looked up at the glass roof, at the 3-inch-thick slabs I had insisted on. I looked at the shimmering mesh that made the sky look like it was trapped in a net. I realized then that the tension he wanted in the column wasn't about the weight of the balcony. It was about the weight of the silence. I took the glass. The champagne was cold, crisp, and expensive. It tasted like the dust from the marble saw. I sat down on the floor across from him. The concrete was cool against my legs. I looked at the exit, the beautiful charred cedar door that I had designed myself. I knew that if I walked over to it and tried the handle, it wouldn't move. I knew that the biometric sensor would never recognize me again. I thought about the city. I thought about the firm. I thought about the thousands of people who would never see this house, who would never know that I had achieved the impossible. I looked at Marcus. He was watching me with a quiet, patient expectation. He wasn't a captor. He was a patron. He was the only person in the world who truly appreciated the genius of my work. I took a sip of the champagne. I told him he was right about the column. The tension is better this way. It makes the rest of the room feel like it's holding its breath. He nodded, satisfied. He said he knew I would see it eventually. He said that once you understand the beauty of a perfect enclosure, you never want to look at the horizon again. The sun began to set, hitting the glass at the exact angle I had calculated. The mesh flared into a brilliant, blinding gold. For a moment, the entire atrium was filled with a light so intense it felt like a physical pressure. I closed my eyes and let the warmth wash over me. I felt the house around me, solid and immovable, a billion-dollar tomb of my own design. I wasn't afraid. I was exhausted. I was finished. I reached out and touched the concrete floor, feeling the slight vibration of the generator deep below. It felt like a heartbeat. It felt like home.